Hey, everybody, welcome back to another episode of You Haven't Seen That Podcast, or YHST for short. I'm Isaac.
I'm Alva.
And this is a show where we cover movies on that growing list of films that has people asking us the question,
You haven't seen that?
Intermission edition. We have finally figured out a way to do the actual movie breakdowns. We're going to cover some big movies first, and then we're finally going to do some breakdowns. We're going to adapt like the, spoiler alert, we're going to adapt the intermission format. Because, we were doing like the big breakdowns, and it took a lot of time, a lot of effort. Spoiler alert, we're also kind of lazy. So, it's just going to be a way for us to continue to have fun, but actually go down those lists of movies that we haven't seen. Because I've been really chomping at the bit, and I glance at those and I'm like, I still want to see, whatever, Lord of the Rings or Kill Bill Volume 2. Jesus, you have to see that one.
I'm okay with that, Lord of the Rings, but yeah, Kill Bill Volume 2.
Don't have to hit it though. But yeah, anyways, if you're listening to this in the future, we live stream, and if TikTok finally gets banned, because we had an extension, then we'll be streaming on Instagram. But either way, you can find us at both places, either places, Elva.
At YHST Pod.
Mm-hmm. We made it simple. So no more forehead films anymore. It's just mostly everything is at YHST Pod. And if you want to support the show, if you want to buy us a bucket of popcorn or a little soda pop, you can do that as well on our Venmo at YHST Pod. Did you want to do any news?
Do you have any news?
You know what? Yeah, because I wanted to start inserting news into these things at the very top, like Hollywood news. I had something else, but I forgot it. But there was one big piece of news is if anyone is looking forward to the Michael Jackson biopic, that thing just got pushed further out because, I don't know all the details, but basically the third act had to get completely scrapped due to legal issues as far as like they weren't supposed to name a person in there. And I won't go into further details because TikTok is sensitive. You can kind of imagine what it is. And anyhow, because they forgot about like the whole legal thing of not naming that person, they had to scrap the entirety of the third act, which made me really curious as what were they going to go into with like the Michael Jackson biopic?
I am not sure.
She has spoken. All right, let's go. That's our news. I'm going to try to have more energy than we did last episode. Last episode, we were sick.
Yeah.
This time, we had a good time last night at our friend Eric's opening, or his launch party. And you can follow them at Little Wins Big Spirits. I think it's underscore. I have to double check
at the
that.
End. Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll have that tagged on Instagram. But they have their launch party. They're a mobile bartending service. So definitely follow them. Hit them up for any parties and gigs and stuff like that. So, man, it was such a good time. And that guy, by the way, if ever you're a whiskey person, talk to him about whiskey. The guy knows his stuff. So check them out. So I'm a little, I enjoyed the whiskey. You can kind of hear it in my voice. A little more ragged today.
Ready.
We're covering three movies. We're covering The Brutalist, One of Them Days, and Presence. We were just going to do the two movies, but we're like, screw it. We had time. We want to go see another movie, as we usually do. Mm-hmm. And then the Oscar nominees came out. We're going to be covering a little of those.
Yes.
Which is, that's your segment. Mm-hmm. So, cool.
Cool.
Man, it's a lot. Okay, it's a lot. There are a lot of movies, but not going to really spoil anything, but I want to kind of break some of these things down because I enjoyed all these three movies. Obviously, there's a difference in like the length of time, the runtime for all these things. But let's start off with the big movie first, The Brutalist from A24 Studio. And I have said it a number of times, and I will continue to say it, that if you're going to have an ambitious movie, A24 are the people to produce it.
They've been doing really good stuff lately.
There's a lot of other stuff. Like, I love that A24 can do horror and sci-fi. Like, literally, they're going from The Brutalist, and the trailer that played in that movie was The Death of a Unicorn.
Oh, yeah.
So really all over the place in the best of ways, eclectic like ourselves. Where to begin with this movie? Produced by A24 Studio. It is a $9.6 million budget. That's tiny. That's so freaking small, but it feels bigger than a $10 million budget. I rounded up. It's a 3.5-hour movie.
With its own 15-minute intermission.
It didn't feel like a 3.5-hour movie. In every shape and form, this movie felt like something that was classic. How it was shot, how the performances, how the style and design of everything. It felt like something that would maybe have come out in the 90s. They shot it in VistaVision. Now, I was hearing people talk about it, and I'm like, okay, what's the significance of this? Because I don't really go super nerdy like camera lenses and all those little gritty details. We saw it in what, IMAX or Dolby?
IMAX.
I suggest that people go out and see this movie. Right off the front, go see this movie. But if you're going to do it, see it on the biggest screen with the best sound for a full movie-going experience.
I think it's only being shown at certain theaters now because it did come out in December.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's only showing like select theaters, which is weird. And I believe only in IMAX.
Right. So we went out to Tustin to go see it. I didn't want to go Fullerton. Tustin was nice. It was real nice.
Very nice.
But we didn't see it in 70 millimeter. I'm hearing that there's some places that are showing in how director Brady Corbet wanted to show it, which is in 70 millimeter. And when you hear that guy talk about making this movie and all those little details, like with any other movie I talk about, it's like if you have somebody who has so much of a passion for what they're making, it comes through, and it really did in this film. But to go a little nerdy, because I did a little research on it, most of it was shot in VistaVision. And what VistaVision essentially is, traditionally film, when you're shooting on film and not like digital, when shooting on film, the film actually runs through what they call the gate vertically. So it forces you to have to use like a wider lens. But because this movie is surrounding architecture, Brutalist architecture, which is very angular, almost like defying gravity, weird looking stuff made with concrete. So anyways, so in order to capture the structures and everything appropriately, they shot in VistaVision, which runs the film horizontally through the gate, which from what I hear allows them to use a longer lens to further capture the structures. That's... my brain hurts. That's as nerdy as I'm going to go.
Well, you're like, what is he saying?
Yeah. But it was really cool. I mean, the cinematographer who I heard describing how VistaVision works, and he went into further detail of how they processed the film to make it look a certain way because they didn't want it to look too clean. They wanted to give it, like, for the most part, like an analog feeling. And when you watch that movie, the film is like a character. I think the cinematographer's name is Lol Crowley. Laugh out loud, Crowley.
LOL.
That's how his name's spelled. So it's starring, these are Nikki Glaser's words, it's starring 2-time Holocaust survivor Adrian Brody. I had to. And Felicity Jones and Guy Pearce, who everyone's performance in this thing were wonderful. It's the story of a Holocaust survivor architect, who was basically separated from his wife from Budapest in the late 40s, early 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And he's trying to build his life back again. And Guy Pearce, who plays the Van Buren, Senior Van Buren, recognizes his talent and hires him to build a monument. It sounds boring on paper, but this film is so much more. It's about perseverance. It's about love. And it doesn't romanticize any of those things because it really gets gritty in certain points. But real quick, I want to give like proper recognition on some of the other actors. For instance, Felicity Jones, who probably you're most familiar with her from Gareth Edwards' Rogue One. A fucking amazing movie. Full stop. And Guy Pearce, who... Jesus, this is like the first good thing he's done since Memento. The guy is amazing, and he really shines in this role. Ultimately, him and his family are kind of like the villains of the whole story, but in such a layered, fucked up kind of way that has to do with, you know, the movie's partly in dude.
Just think intolerance. 1950s aristocratic family.
Yeah.
I did forget that he was a Memento.
Directed by Christopher Nolan.
There you go. Yeah, I did not know.
I prepared the slide for that one.
Oh, here we go.
The overall feel of this movie is a feeling of loss, a feeling of humanity. You're pushing for this guy, and he's encountering so much resistance in many ways, racially, status-wise, economically, spiritually at some points. Because his architecture type, the whole brutalist thing, is so unique, stands above anything that's normal. This guy is such a thinker. And doesn't really let anything get in his way. Even for moments where he's trying to collaborate with everyone else who is essentially funding this monument. And it takes some turns that I really didn't expect. And in a way, with such a deep expression, a a very raw expression of intolerance that I did not see coming. And it just took that turn. I want to say that it needed, because it's a 3.5 hour movie. I wanted it to be more. I wanted it to be another hour, because of where that, when that turn happened, I wanted them to explain his life after that in a little more detail. And that's the first time I really ever seen.
Yeah, kind of just like cut off a bit after a certain part, and then it just went to like the end, but it wasn't really explained what happens after
it
a
was,
certain thing.
Yeah, they hinted at it. If you go see this movie, don't think like, oh, Jesus, 3.5 hours. No, no. Because they split it up, I mean, how we've all binged like TV shows. You know, we sat for like 3, 4, 5 hours watching a season of something. So
are you still there? Yes, I'm still here to keep playing the damn episodes.
So it was an easy watch. And what also made an easy watch, no matter the runtime, is this is storytelling, how it's supposed to be done, how it's supposed to be acted, how it's supposed to be written, how it's supposed to be shot. There's no wasted shot. There's no wasted dialogue, nor any wasted expression. Mm-hmm. This is damn near perfect. I really hope that people who are movie lovers get a chance to see this.
And I like how they ended part one, where it didn't leave it as a cliff. Well, it did leave it kind of in a way as a cliffhanger, but it didn't like abruptly stop before the intermission. It was like part one is completed, and then intermission, which was amazing because I didn't know I needed to stretch my legs at that point.
Yeah, yeah. But it was refreshing to come back and experience rest.
But at the same time, it was how part two started. It felt like you were going to watch a whole separate movie.
Yeah, and that's what made it feel like that's my brain could digest it a little easier, thinking of it like, okay, we saw a couple episodes of something, went to the bathroom, came back, and finished off the rest.
It's like Titanic VHS. You had two VHSs for that.
Holy shit. You just took us back right now.
You know, you just had a one, you're done, and then the other one you had to begin, make sure, you know, you rewind it and put it in. Miss VHS.
Even from the opening shot of the movie, there is this this one-er sequence where Adrian Brody's character, Laszlo Toth, is arriving to Alice Island, and he's rising from the belly of the ship to bring him onto that island. And it's this impressive shot, like it's this symbolic of, you know, rising out of the dark, these dark places. Yet, even though he's happy, him and his, whoever, his friend or cousin are happy that they've made it, the camera pans up, and this is on the poster. It pans up and you think, well, of course, they're going to show the Statue of Liberty. And instead, it shows an inverted Statue of Liberty, which is the entire fucking movie. He's doing his darndest to pull himself up by the bootstraps, no matter all of these speed bumps and other obstacles, and yet has to deal with American, not imperialism, but this class system. And like I said it before, this extreme level of intolerance. The start of America in its
post-World War II America.
Thank you.
Where it's gray. People are more modern pessimistic America. In a way.
It's basically the birth of modern America. That's which people are pessimistic and, and all that in between commercials.
It's just the same thing, yeah. But there's a scene that I really liked. It's when he meets another character in there. And this character is a person of color. Adrian Brody's character, Laszlo, he just treats him like just a regular person. And it takes, what was his character's name? Gordon.
Gordon.
It takes him like, he's like in shock. I'm not expecting this from you.
Yeah. Yeah. It really is a movie of intolerance and tolerance. And although Laszlo is the protagonist and you're rooting for him, I said it before, he's not romanticized. He is flawed. He is as human as possible. Whether it be women or substances, he's just utterly flawed and tries to push past that.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it a character that you can relate to. So see the movie. See the damn movie. Please go watch this movie.
Make sure you drink coffee. If you drink coffee, make sure you're well rested.
Yeah, it was an event. We went out. We drove out to go see it well caffeinated.
Yeah, because if you get a little too comfortable, sometimes you end up kind of falling asleep. You know, I didn't this time, though.
No, yeah. I thought I was going to get sleepy watching this movie. Man, I was locked in. And when it ended, I go, no, I wanted like another hour. I wanted them.
I would sit for another hour.
To explore this certain part of the storyline. It was really well done. You know, one of the, going back to romanticize, just, and then we'll close out on the brutalist. For most of the movie, he's trying to get his wife over to America. And so you hear her reading the letter. You hear her voice reading the letters. And it's very sweet. And it's romantic and everything. And then finally, you see it in the trailer. She does come over. But point being is they act like a married couple. And those in long-term relationships know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Not every moment is romantic and it gets very serious. And there's some dark places that they go to and they have to deal with. And I appreciated that in that movie.
Yeah, I like that because it wasn't like a romanticized marriage.
Yeah.
It was more, it did have some romance, but it was very realistic, very grounded on how I believe it would be, like a marriage would be portrayed. All that, like you're not going to be all like, 24/7.
Okay, lastly, before we close it out, because I just remembered, the movie has a little bit of a blemish on its name and there's some controversy because of it. This movie used AI, a little bit of AI in two, I consider small aspects, but the business is so against AI and I don't know why anyone, whatever. It's not going to be a whole long discussion, but the two ways that AI was used in this movie was at the very end of the film, they show Laszlo Toff's work. Evidently, AI was used to create those structures. Because if you look at the structures, they look like something AI would create. It's odd looking, asymmetric, and symmetric in some aspects. The other thing that they used, I think the AI program is called Speecher. I'm probably most likely wrong as I usually am. But the moments that any character was speaking, I think Hungarian, even though the actors who had to speak it, so Adrian Brody and Felicity Jones, amongst a couple of other people, even though they had dialect coaches to make it seem as if they knew Hungarian all along, the director wanted it to be so flawless that even a country-born Hungarian person would be fooled. So the way that they had to do that was using AI to make sure that anything spoken in Hungarian was flawless. I don't have a problem with that personally at all.
Isn't Adrian Brody Hungarian?
I don't know.
So I feel like it would be used maybe for other characters.
But it doesn't matter though, because like even if a person is a certain ethnicity, they may not be able to speak that language as if they were born from that country. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And if the director wanted this movie to feel as authentic as possible, yeah, I absolutely see why he utilized it. But people are shitting on it. And I maybe for like the creation of the architecture, I can kind of see that. Maybe you could have employed a couple of people, but I don't know.
I mean, the budget didn't really
allow for.
Yeah.
But even still, I don't know. People need to fucking relax. It's a different thing if, you know, you're completely replacing a whole special effects department or whatever. I mean, it's not like new technology hasn't eliminated some jobs in the past. Hell, even the creation of CG. But whatever, it's a discussion for a different day. I just think people are being way too harsh on it. So, all right, you kick us off on the next movie.
All right, One of Them Days, starring Kiki Palmer and SZA. Two best friends and roommates, Drew and Alyssa, discover Alyssa's boyfriend has blown their rent money. The duo finds themselves going to extremes in a race against the clock to avoid eviction and to keep their friendship intact. I think this movie did an amazing job, not only some of those locations where it brought me back going like, I have driven by here every Wednesday going to my dad's for breakfast. But the way it's just like these two girls struggling just to like get rent. And the fact that I was jealous of how much they were paying for rent.
What was it, $1,500?
Yeah, and I'm just like, excuse me. Also, I would not want to live there. But
yeah. The movie takes place in Crenshaw, very familiar to me. I used to work the first 7 years of me working pest control in that exact neighborhood in what they call the jungle. And they call it the jungle, not being disparaging. But it's like, I am like, I know that place and that place. That's cool.
I know the was it the check in the cash place?
Yeah.
With Cat Williams kind of like out the window.
Holy shit.
So I'm like, I have driven past here. There is a Togo's next to it. There's.
What's funny though, the Cat Williams character is someone who's like warning them, kind of like in real life, how he was warning us about Diddy.
Basically, about everyone in the industry. I don't think there's anyone he hasn't warned us about, but nobody listened to him.
Mm-mm. So I love his character. He plays a good dude in there. You said before that it felt like Friday.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like an update. It felt like a combination of Friday and Hangover because both movies had this device of like they got to get their shit done by the end of the day or else, you know, they're possibly dead.
It also felt like another version of Issa Rae's like Insecure. If it were like a movie, yeah. Oh, it's such a good show.
Is this directed or produced by Issa Rae?
I think it's produced by Issa. I think it's like her production company or something like that. Yeah. But that show is amazing and it goes very well with this movie. I don't think there was anything I disliked about it.
There wasn't anything that I disliked about it. One of the things that made it so much fun was the amount of slapstick and the comedy. Like, the pacing was really good for a 90-minute movie. It's in that golden spot of the movie just chugged along, moving on to the next thing and to the next thing, and had a perfect number of laughs per minute or whatever you want to like fucking quantify it. But it was just so good. But what I'm trying to get to is that slapstick worked on like 95% of the movie. But there's just a few things that were like a little more cartoony than I expected it to be. It still was funny, but, you know, it kind of like, for the most part, jumped the shark just a little bit. But that movie's damn near perfect. Yeah. The overall feeling of like the community, that neighborhood is so real. Because, again, I used to work there for a number of years. And this is a movie that couldn't have been written by anybody else and couldn't have been performed by anybody else because of the nuances of the neighborhood and the culture. It was fucking fun. It was hilarious. It was like laugh out loud, belly laughing, hilarious, that still managed to have heart and a whole lot of charm, mainly thanks to Kiki Palmer, who, dude, I want her in so many. Not only do I want her in more things, but like I want to see a sequel to this movie that we can maybe call like One of Those Days. Because there's so much more of the story that could be told.
Yeah.
Not only that, but like it's a fucking lightning in a bottle thing when you have chemistry between two leads with Kiki Palmer and SZA. This is SZA's acting debut, and she was wonderful in this. But that's, I think, thanks to the chemistry between the both of them.
Yeah, I feel like something about Kiki Palmer just has you very relaxed. All her interviews with like Variety, she like has this presence about her where she relaxes everyone.
You told me that she reminded you of another actress.
Oh, yeah. Angela Bassett.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a spitting image of her.
She has like that that same energy. No, but SZA did good. I did like their dynamic in there where just like every friendship, there's a little bit of like a little bit of miscommunication. You kind of like argue a little bit and everything like that, which it didn't make it feel fake.
No. It very much felt genuine. As far as like the relationship?
Yeah.
I can say that like we've all had a friendship like that where, you know, you maybe have a friend who's not entirely put together and you have to continue to, you know, keep each other in check and bring themselves up. Or a friendship where maybe you see something special in the other person, but you're not really giving yourself that much credit. Like there was so much to this movie. It was awesome and a very, very fun watch.
Of course, Maude Apatow, she was in there. She's also
Judd Apatow's daughter.
Yeah. What has she been in, though?
I don't know if she's been in a lot of things, but, man, she was fucking hilarious. But honestly, though, like, if you've ever been in Crenshaw and there's a white person in that neighborhood, everyone, like, stops and looks at the unicorn.
Yeah. Yeah. She played, like, a more livelier version of her character and like from Euphoria.
Oh, she was in Euphoria?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Man, I think one of my favorite scenes was when they go to the checking place and
don't do it.
Get their credit score checked out. Sorry, I'm not trying to spoil anything. But you should go see this movie. It's fucking hilarious. It's a fun 90-minute watch. And I think it's a movie that we're gonna please go see it. I think it's a movie that we're gonna rewatch. I really do think it's a movie that people will tuck next to Friday. And The Hangover. I want more of these movies. And I want more leading Kiki Palmer roles. Especially because like she was in Nope. I was like, damn, she's so fun. But she was a supporting actress and didn't really
have. She did such a good job in Nope.
Yep. Yep. Nope. Yep.
Nope.
Moving on.
Last movie.
Okay. So this one's going to be a quick one for the most part. We saw Steven Soderbergh's Presence. This movie starring Lucy Liu and Chris Sullivan, who you would be familiar from.
This Is Us.
This Is Us. What did I say? The Last of Us when I asked?
Yeah.
You're like, yes. I'm like, okay. He was in the zombie thing.
All I heard was us. And I'm like, of course.
But if you're not familiar with Steven Soderbergh, where the hell have you been? He is responsible for the the Magic Mike series and
I have not seen Magic Mike
franchise, not series, but
yeah,
you've never seen Magic Mike at
nah.
all.
I'm not really much of a Channing Tatum fan. Like, it's just like you would think it would be into the movie, right?
I guess
because of all the books I read, but no, it does. It does not like does not draw me to that.
Anyway, so he's also. I have no retort or follow up for that.
Fine.
But he was also responsible for the Ocean's 11 series franchise.
I've seen that.
Yeah, as well as a dozen other things. I love having an experienced director take on a unique premise. And the premise of this thing, which is so misrepresented in the promos and trailers and things like that, mm-hmm. that people might be disappointed thinking it's one thing and it is, in fact, another. Because it comes across in the promos and ads as a horror film. This is not a horror film.
Mm-mm.
Mm-mm.
No.
But it doesn't make it lesser than. But just know that you're not going to get scared. There's not going to be any jump scares or anything like that.
It's more of a psychological thriller.
I would say thriller. Yeah. Suspense thriller. What makes it unique is that it's shot in the point of view of the ghost or the presence.
Ooh.
A ghost.
Oh, no.
And so although it feels a little voyeuristic, in the beginning, there's some quick moving camera movements. And I was like, oh, no, is it going to be like Hardcore Henry? Am I going to get nauseous? But, you know, there was reason for those quick movements. And it ultimately finally calmed down. But it's kind of tough to storytell with a new device like this, a new storytelling device. And so you do rely mostly on the dialogue. A little on the editing because it would time jump, you know, go to black and then, you know, fast forward a couple of weeks, couple of months.
I did like how those moments where it did fully go dark, I'm like, the ghost is going to sleep. Hmm. I don't want to be here right now. They're overstimulating me. I'm going to go to take a nap. that's how I took it because I'm like, okay, cool. And then like.
This is about a near spicy ghost. But like as far as the storytelling, you know, you're relying on the ghost observing certain people and them basically spoon feeding us some of the story, which there is like an A and B plot, and that A plot is completely forgotten because I wanted to know what significance it had, and I honestly think it was just to kind of keep you busy and locked in because you relatively quickly find out why you're watching the movie. It's to find out why the ghost is there and who the ghost is. And once those things are revealed, this makes it a rewatchable movie. This makes it a movie that sticks with you, you know, makes that discussion on the drive home an interesting one. Would you see this to remember that? Does this mean that?
It also kind of gave a very interstellar.
Oh, yeah. But that would be a spoiler.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's the hint of a spoiler, whatever. It's so good. There's
not much to say about it.
Yeah,
without spoiling.
That's why. Yeah. That's why we threw it in here, though, was because it was going to be just a quick discussion, something that we can easily recommend for people to go see. I don't know what the runtime is, but everyone's performances was wonderful, and there's just certain moments where it's like heartbreaking. I loved it.
I think it was like 90 minutes,
dude. Also, I thought I had a picture of the house. That house, though, the interior of it's
like a craftsman house.
Yeah, it's so stunning. Everyone was good in it. There's one character in there. I thought they maybe could have recast. His acting was okay, but for the most part, it's such an interesting thing that I think you guys need to see. And it's paced well enough where you're not going to fall asleep. Because once it does kick in, then you're locked in to find out what the hell's going to happen next. So I'm into it.
Watch it.
So that's that for our movie reviews, which then means that we move on to a segment of the show that we like to call Why Chase Tea Gets Fresh. Ooh. Every other episode, me and Alva alternate in guessing the Rotten Tomato critic and audience score, as well as giving our own personal rating on the aforementioned movie, in this case, three movies. From 0 to 100, 59 below being rotten and 16 above being fresh. It is now my turn to guess the score. Hell yeah. All right, we're starting with The Brutalist. I personally give The Brutalist a 98%. It's up there.
Okay.
And I think the critics maybe gave it a 95%, and I think that the audience enjoyed it at a 90%.
Okay. So critics gave it a 93%. Audience gave it an 82%.
Hmm.
I kind of understand why it would be an 82%, maybe the length of the movie.
Yeah.
Maybe certain aspects of it.
Dude, certain people. Oh, I get it. So many people are like, how long's the runtime? I had to sit through it. There's a pause, blah, blah, blah.
And I feel like also some people are not used to like having an intermission in things.
Mm-mm. I liked it. Yeah. It was such a fun movie going experience. So so you said the critics gave it a 93?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Well, next one. One of them days.
One of them days, I personally give that movie an 85%. I think that the critics gave it an 80, and I think that the audience gave it a 90.
Okay. Critics gave it a 94.
Ooh.
Audience gave it a 91.
Really? That one's interesting.
Well, I mean, because it's very relatable. It's very with right now. So it's like a comedy. So it's kind of like, I don't really have anything bad. I would give that like a 95, to be honest. Well,
I can see why. Yeah, I gave it an 85 because I feel like there was I don't know. I feel like there's like some room to grow, you know, in regards to like some of the slapstick and whatever. But like I can see why the critics give it a 94. I'm more surprised that the audience didn't love it more than the critics, considering that this movie was like such a fantastic comedy. Yeah.
I don't know. And then Presence.
Mm-hmm. Presence, I gave that one 80%. I would have given it higher, but the storytelling was a little spoon-fed. I think critics gave it a 75%. I think audience gave it a 70.
Okay. So critics gave it an 87.
Wow.
Audience gave it a 54.
Ooh.
But I get it because...
The drop-off.
You just don't...
I bet that drop in it with the audience is because they thought they were watching a scary movie.
Yeah.
But oh, and by the way, whoever's making the trailers, dude, don't fucking spoil them. There's a big spoiler in the movie.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't notice until he told me after. And I would have never noticed. But here's the thing.
That's so dumb.
Whoever did the trailer also made it seem like you're going to go see this movie and it's going to be like.
Yeah. They edited it into a horror film.
Yeah. So it's like, wait, what's going on? Because I was going in, I was like, this is going to be spooky. This is going to be scary. I love it. And I'm like, this is the opposite of what this is. What am I doing? Okay, now let's put this all together. Like, let's see. But I understand why maybe the audience gave it a 57.
Yeah, so I think it's just based off of, that expectation. So those are our ratings on Rotten Tomato. Why Just Eat Gets Fresh? Ooh. All right, and then Alva's going to help us cover the Oscar nominations for the 2025 Oscar Awards, which is going to be on March 3rd? March 2nd.
Ooh, March 2nd. Yeah, mm-hmm. I was right.
So we'll be covering that again.
Okay.
Or not again, but awards. Covering the awards.
I feel like Oscars are very prestigious. So we'll start with Best Picture.
Mm-hmm.
Anora, The Brutalist, A Complete Unknown, Conclave, Dune Part 2, Emilia Perez, I'm Still Here, Nickel Boys, The Substance, and Wicked.
That's for Best Picture?
This is Best Picture.
Wow.
I feel...
I'm glad that the Dune got in there.
Yeah. And the fact that there is also like, because the Golden Globes didn't really have Nickel Boys or Sing Sing or anything like that. Mm. It just kind of kept to blockbuster in a weird way. Let's see, actor in a leading role, Adrien Brody for The Brutalist, Timothée Chalamet for A Complete Unknown, Colman Domingo for Sing Sing, Ralph Fiennes for Conclave, I said it right, Sebastian Stan for Apprentice.
You know what? And I'm going to throw in some snubs, things that got snubbed in there. Queer.
Oh, for Best Picture?
Yeah. Daniel Craig, or as far as like an actor in a leading role.
Yeah.
I think he at least deserved to be nominated.
But that's the thing with like the Oscars. They're very picky. So if a movie has too much lewd conduct, they're going to be like, we're not there. They're not like the Golden Globes where they're more open about it.
Got it.
Okay. Actor in a supporting role.
Okay.
Yura Borisov for Anora. Kieran Culkin for Real Pain, Edward Norton, A Complete Unknown, Guy Pearce, The Brutalist, and Jeremy Strong or Vector as The Apprentice. It's not my fault he dressed that way.
The ones I'm very much looking forward to see are Nora, Real Pain, and The Apprentice because we've seen all the other ones.
Real Pain is on Hulu.
Anora's in theaters and streaming?
Anora is just in theaters right now. It hasn't been streaming.
Okay.
Actress in a leading role would be Cynthia Erivo for Wicked, Carla Sofia Gascon for Emilia Perez, Mickey Madsen for Anora, Demi Moore for The Substance, and Fernanda Torres for I'm Still Here. But I feel like for this one, it's going to be either a battle of Carla Sofia Gascon or Fernanda Torres. Maybe a Demi Moore in there. I don't believe Cynthia Erivo will win this just because
just a level of actual dramatic acting with those other ones that you mentioned.
Yeah. Then actress in a supporting role, we have Monica Barbaro for A Complete Unknown.
She was great. But I think up against Ariana Grande in Wicked, that's easy goes to Ariana Grande.
Yep. Then you got Felicity Jones and Isabella Rossellini and Zoe Saldana, who are...
also good.
Yeah. So I feel like this one is really much more of a toss-up.
Yeah, I am. But going back to it, I'm glad A Complete Unknown is actually in the running for some of those things.
Yeah. And then animated feature film. Since we do watch animated, I felt like we do have to cover some. Flo is one of our already Golden Globe winners.
Yeah.
And I would like to see it. I don't think it's in theaters, but I would really love to see
it. It's on the list. We'll check it out.
Yeah. Inside Out 2.
So wonderful.
Memoir of a Snail.
Heard it's a slow movie.
Oh, it's fine with me. Wallace and Gromit.
Sorry, go ahead.
Wallace and Gromit, A Vengeance Must Fall, and The Wild Robot. I think Flo is going to win this one.
You know, it's funny. I need to see Wallace and Gromit because going up against all of those ones, it's like, wow, how awesome was Wallace and Gromit? Also, I'm very fucking happy that Moana 2 isn't in that running because I said it when we were covering the Golden Globes. I'm like, I'm surprised it was even nominated for movies that I think are so cookie cutter that it fools people.
I feel the only reason that Flo was going to win this one is because it's a new style of animation.
Completely disagree. It's because of Cats. Move on.
And Cats. Cats, definitely. Yeah. Okay.
Because people love Cats. Full stop.
And then, of course, international films would be I'm Still Here, The Girl with the Needle, Emilia Perez, The Seed of a Sacred Fig, and Flo.
Oh, cool.
So I feel like with this one, it may be I'm Still Here. Battling it out with Emilia Perez, we may be surprised if for some reason Flo wins this one.
I just picture you like, let's just somehow we're like live streaming the Oscars. You're like, and I'm Still Here is battling it out with The Girl with a Needle. Oh, 1-2. Sorry.
Wow.
Just because you use the word battling it out.
Okay. Yeah, we're going to go. Okay. So
just let me have it.
I am not saying anything. But when we were talking about cinematography earlier, I do want to cover that because I feel like that is a big part of movies.
Yeah.
So we have cinematography. Crowley. Thank you.
Yep.
Greg Fraser.
For Dune Part 2.
Dune Part 2.
Yeah. Man, that movie looked great.
Ed Lockman for Maria. Great movie. Jaron Blaschke for Nosferatu.
Oh, man.
And Paul.
I like how you saved that one for last. On the list, it was third.
I saw it. I'm like,
Paul, Google the pronunciation yourself. God damn it. We're YHST. I think our tagline is to be like, YHST. You expect more information and correct facts? Mm-mm. You're fucking wrong.
Paul G for Emilia Perez. I don't want to miss.
They're all French, aren't they? Yeah.
No, they're not all French.
I'm going to look it up then. How do you spell that last name?
G-U-I.
I got it. Let's see. Oh, for fuck's sake. Hold on. Jesus Christ.
Oh, my God. A video about osteoporosis. I love it.
Hold on. Guillaume.
Guillaume. Paul Guillaume.
Now, for the edit, go ahead.
Paul Guillaume.
And that's how we do the show. Very clunkily and pulling it together in the edit. The magic of fucking editing.
Yeah. But the fact that Maria got on here is what surprised me.
True. Yeah.
Because Maria was not getting any.
Well, didn't get any loves.
And no, didn't get anything. Yeah. Also, costume design.
Okay.
A Complete Unknown.
Yeah.
Conclave.
Yeah. Costume design for Conclave, that's super easy. Everyone wears a fucking robe.
That's why I got put on there. You have to find the correct robes. Gladiator 2.
Also, everyone wears a fucking rogue and a toga.
Nosferatu.
Okay.
Very much so.
Yeah.
The fact that it's very much of a period piece. Mm-hmm. A Wicked.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing.
Oh, the costume design for Wicked is super cool. It's like, it's one thing to adapt something from stage to film, it means that you have to be more meticulous with the details. And the costume design for Wicked was fantastic. What else are you covering?
We are going to go with makeup and hairstyle. A Different Man. That one that's the one with Sebastian Stan. And he's advocating for more.
Making like physical disabilities and disfigurements normalized.
Yeah. Emilia Perez. I'm not so sure about that, but we'll I haven't seen it, so I can't really say much about it. Yeah. Nosferatu, definitely.
Yeah, when you finally do see Count Orlok. Perhaps.
The Substance.
Oh, man. Dude, I'm so happy that this one is on there because when we were watching the movie, in fact, I think I might have even included it in my video review of The Substance, that the one thing I remember that like made the movie stick and, you know, you're feeling it a little more is the seamlessness of the makeup and the prosthetics and everything. Like it looked that and with that coupled up with the sound design just made that body gore feel more ooky.
Okay. And the last one is Wicked.
Yes.
Okay. Of course I have to go with film editing. Anora, of course, we have not seen, so we don't know. The Brutalist.
I can attest. Yeah. After watching The Brutalist, it needed to be 3.5 hours and every cut was so important.
Conclave.
Okay.
I felt like that one had really good
pacing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Emily Perez, we got to watch it to see. Mm-hmm. And Wicked.
Editing is so weird because you can notice bad editing because it's just not on a certain beat or, you know, not letting a thing breathe or you're letting it breathe too damn much. So you can notice bad editing, but editing is supposed to be invisible for the most part.
And the last one that I feel would go with when we look at movies is visual effects.
Absolutely. Let's close that out. Go ahead.
Alien Romulus.
So good. Alien Romulus brought horror back into the Alien franchise and brought practical effects back into it. They did still use CG visual effects. And if you watch on YouTube, Corridor Digital, they cover the visual effects of Alien Romulus. And they nerd out and geek out about it and all those wonderful details. It looks fucking great. I even commented it a time before that the visual effects help give this like grand scope of outer space.
Then we have Better Man. Hmm. That's the one with...
That's the Robbie Williams biopic.
Okay. I could see visual effects for that one.
Robbie Williams is a huge pop star in England, not in America. So that's why that movie unfortunately fell flat in the box office.
Mm-hmm. Dune Part 2.
Dude. Again, Corridor Digital covered the visual effects of Dune and how they, you know, compose and CG created these things. It's so wonderful because it feels and looks real and great.
Wicked, the fact that they created this whole Oz. They created Oz and everything. Like, they just created, like, a mini Wicked world.
Mm-hmm. To make a fantastical world feel like you're there.
Yeah, and last but not least, Kingdom of Planet of the Apes.
So Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, although the story was okay and it took place generations after whatever like the third movie was, visually the movie looked fucking wonderful. Like they continued to make the mocap that much more better. So that one rightfully earns its place as a nominee for visual effects.
Yeah, definitely. I don't have much more.
Yeah, there's a lot of other genres like live action short film, production design, sound and things like that, as well as like music. But it's a lot to cover, so we're gonna cut it short there. But
yeah, I just felt like those were the ones that we usually do focus on.
Yeah, yeah,
absolutely. We don't really focus on music unless it's amazing. We don't really focus on writing unless the thing is really amazing or it's like an adapted screenplay. True. Or something like that. So I think usually it's mostly makeup, editing, everything like that we're focusing on.
But I will say I'm one of the nerds that advocates for like sound. Like, oh my God, the sound design in this thing was so damn wonderful.
Well, let's see who it is, yeah.
Go ahead.
We got A Complete Unknown. Okay. Mm-hmm. Dune Part 2.
Yeah.
Emilia Perez.
Again, what do they have, like 14
They got 13.
We haven't seen the movie yet, but people are saying that like, I feel like we're getting gaslit with that movie.
We got Wicked. And The Wild Robot.
Okay. Yeah. Those like the sound design of those ones didn't really stand out for me. So I would have figured like The Substance would have got in there. But okay.
Do you want to talk some about some of the snubs?
In short, in a nutshell, there are other handful of people that run movie pages and things like that. And they had a big list of movies that got snubbed. But there were moments where I rendered their lists bullshit. When they included like Trap. Like Trap got snubbed. I'm like, no, that movie fucking sucked. Somebody even said Madam Web. I'm like, what the hell? No. But there's just so many. I don't know how many nominees they're allowed to have. it was a great year for movies. That's a lot of movies to decide who to have up there.
Yeah, no, and I was looking at like what the rules and eligibility is. Oh my God, that is a complete list I was trying to read and comprehend. A lot of them just have to do with, was it a limited release? Mm. The days that it was shown, did it have like a premiere thing? Was it filmed on a certain 35 or 70 millimeter film?
Oh, wow.
Like, they're so picky. Like, I was really trying to go through all of this, and I'm just like, I don't know if a lot of these, and of course, like, if it goes straight to DVD or something, you're not getting no, picked.
Not at all.
And also has to have a premiere. So, like, with Emily Perez, it didn't really have much of a premiere in the States, but in France, it had its own premiere.
Hmm.
And if it's in a film festival, that's also qualified for you to as a eligibility to submit. So that one was submitted through that.
Wow, that's so specific.
So Maria is one that had a limited release, but because it was in a film festival and then it's also on Netflix, it can be brought up for a nomination.
I remember you telling me that, because I always get bothered by how limited releases. I'm like, no, I actually want to go to the theaters and see these things. And then you told me, well, the reason why they're in limited release, because they're mainly banking on it just streaming on a whatever streaming service. And maybe they didn't have the budget to distribute it to all these to theaters worldwide. And so technically having it limited release in theaters fulfills that eligibility,
mm-hmm.
qualification, excuse me.
There is, I think,
that's all the, oh my God.
Like, it's eligibility. Dude,
she's just scrolling and scrolling, and there's so many rules.
And then it's also like the voting, like how you vote and special rules for certain, because it's just like the rules for costume design. It's also the rules for like every aspect of a movie. And
you can Google those rules, because we're not going to fucking cover those.
I will try to read them for you, but I won't.
Welcome to YHSD Pod, where we're covering rules and regulations for the movies, which we're fucking not. So anyways, we'll wrap it up there. But just to round it back off, Brutalist, check it out. See it in theater. See it on the biggest screen. I implore you to please watch a beautiful movie like that. One of Them Days is such a fun film. Take your friends, go see that in theaters. Get a whole, try to get a whole packed theater. The more people, the better, because it's fun to watch comedies with other people. And then Presence is not a horror film, but it is still an enjoyable, properly paced movie that's a nice, fun watch. And it might have a, not necessarily rewatchability aspect to it, but it makes you think even after, once the end is revealed. All right, so let's wrap the episode up. Thank you guys once again for enduring our stupidity.
Thank you.
We continue to try to figure this show out and try to be as prepared as possible. But hey, we're on brand. So anyways, you can you can find us on our social medias. Unless TikTok gets banned, on either places it's at
YHST Pod.
There you go. Simple, easy to know, easy to type out and everything. And again, if you want to support us, you can do so at YHST Pod on Venmo. Buy us a bucket of pop.
Buy us a bucket of popcorn.
God dang it. Oh, man, I thought I was going to stick that one. Anyways, thank you guys. I love you, mean it. And check us out on anywhere podcasts are found. Try to like, share, and follow, subscribe, and share those things, because I want to try to get momentum going and make this thing matter. But in the meantime, let us know what films are on your growing list of movies. It has people asking us the question. Has that people asking you the question?
You haven't seen that? I was a little bit early.
I'll do better next week.
Okay, bye.
And I will see you next week. Hold me to it. Later, folks.
Bye.